In long Indian file, as when herons take wing, the white birds were now all flying toward Ahab's boat, and when within a few yards began fluttering over the water there, wheeling round and round with joyous expectant cries. Their vision was keener than man's. Ahab could discover no sign in the sea. But suddenly, as he peered down and down into its depths, he profoundly saw a white, living spot, no bigger than a white weasel, with wonderful celerity uprising and magnifying as it rose, till it turned, and then there were plainly revealed two long, crooked rows of white, glistening teeth floating up from the undiscoverable bottom. It was Moby Dick's open mouth and scrolled jaw, his vast shadowed bulk still half blending with the blue of the sea. The glittering mouth yawned beneath the boat like an open-doored marble tomb, and giving one sidelong sweep with his steering oar, Ahab whirled the craft aside from this tremendous apparition. Then, calling upon Fadala to change places with him, went forward to the bows and, seizing Perth's harpoon, commanded his crew to grasp their oars and stand by to stern. Now, by reason of this timely spinning round the boat upon its axis, its bow, by anticipation, was made to face the whale's head while yet under water. But as if perceiving this stratagem, Moby Dick, with that malicious intelligence ascribed to him, sidelingly transplanted himself, as it were, in an instant, shooting his pleated head lengthwise beneath the boat. Through and through every plank and each rib, it thrilled for an instant. The whale obliquely lying on his back in the manner of a biting shark, slowly and feelingly taking its bows full within his mouth so that the long, narrow, scrolled lower jaw curled high up into the open air and one of the teeth caught in a rowlock. The bluish pearl white of the inside of the jaw was within 6 inches of Ahab's head and reached higher than that. In this attitude, the white whale now shook the slight cedar as a mildly cruel cat her mouse. With unastonished eyes, Fadala gazed and crossed his arms. But the tiger-yellow crew were tumbling over each other's heads to gain the uttermost stern. And now, while both elastic gunwales were springing in and out as the whale dallied with the doomed craft in this devilish way, and from his body being submerged beneath the boat he could not be darted at from the bows, for the bows were almost inside of him, as it were, and while the other boats involuntarily paused as before a quick crisis impossible to withstand, then it was that monomaniac Ahab, furious with this tantalizing vicinity of his foe, which placed him all alive and helpless in the very jaws he hated, frenzied with all this, he seized the long bone with his naked hands and wildly strove to wrench it from its gripe. As now he thus vainly strove, the jaw slipped from him, the frail gunwales bent in, collapsed, and snapped, as both jaws, like an enormous shears sliding further aft, bit the craft completely in twain, and locked themselves fast again in the sea, midway between the two floating wrecks. These floated aside, the broken ends drooping, the crew at the stern wreck clinging to the gunwales and striving to hold fast to the oars to lash them across. At that preluding moment, ere the boat was yet snapped, Ahab, the first to perceive the whale's intent by the crafty upraising of his head, a movement that loosed his hold for the time, at that moment his hand had made one final effort to push the boat out of the bight, but only slipping further into the whale's mouth and tilting over sideways as it slipped, the boat had shaken off his hold on the jaw, spilled him out of it as he leaned to the push, and so he fell flat-faced upon the sea. Ripplingly withdrawing from his prey, Moby Dick now lay at a little distance, vertically thrusting his oblong white head up and down in the billows, and at the same time slowly revolving his whole spindled body, so that when his vast wrinkled forehead rose some 20 or more feet out of the water, the now rising swells, with all their confluent waves, dazzlingly broke against it, vindictively tossing their shivered spray still higher into the air. This motion is peculiar to the sperm whale. It receives its designation, pitch-poling, from its being likened to that preliminary up-and-down poise of the whale lance in the exercise called pitch-poling, previously described. By this motion the whale must best and most comprehensively view whatever objects may be encircling him. So, in a gale, the but-half-baffled channel billows only recoil from the base of the eddy stone, triumphantly to overleap its summit with their scud. But soon resuming his horizontal attitude, Moby Dick swam swiftly round and round the wrecked crew, sideways churning the water in his vengeful wake, as if lashing himself up to still another and more deadly assault. The sight of the splintered boat seemed to madden him, as the blood of grapes and mulberries cast before Antiochus elephants in the Book of Maccabees. Meanwhile, Ahab, half-smothered in the foam of the whale's insolent tail and too much of a cripple to swim, though he could still keep afloat even in the heart of such a whirlpool as that, helpless Ahab's head was seen like a tossed bubble which the least chance shock might burst. From the boat's fragmentary stern, Fadala incuriously and mildly eyed him. The clinging crew at the other drifting end could not succor him, more than enough was it for them to look to themselves. For so revolvingly appalling was the white whale's aspect, and so planetarily swift the ever-contracting circles he made, that he seemed horizontally swooping upon them. And though the other boats, unharmed, still hovered hard by, still they dared not pull into the eddy to strike, lest that should be the signal for the instant destruction of the jeopardized castaways, Ahab and all, nor in that case could they themselves hope to escape. With straining eyes, then, they remained on the outer edge of the direful zone, whose center had now become the old man's head. Meantime, from the beginning, all this had been descried from the ship's mastheads, and squaring her yard, she had borne down upon the scene, and was now so nigh that Ahab in the water hailed her. "Sail on the—" But that moment of breaking sea dashed on him from Moby Dick and whelmed him for the time. But struggling out of it again, and chancing to rise on a towering crest, he shouted, "Sail on the whale! Drive him off!"